Welcome back to The Best Of. I'm Sean Patrick, and this morning we're joined by Hank Bordowitz. He's the author of Billy Joel, Life and Times of an Angry Young Man, the very first biography, I believe, of Billy Joel. Good morning, Hank.
Well, it's not really the first. It is the first exhaustive one.
Okay.
You know, it's I hate to use the definitive. Sounds like I'm blowing my own horn here, but...
It's all right.
You know, worked hard on it.
Well, and it's I read this thing in like 3 days. I could not stop reading it because Billy Joel's life, I mean, we've got a rare artist here who is so confessional in his music, he's almost got his own biography just in his songs.
Well, yeah, though that only tells you part of the
right.
story.
Right, and that's exactly what your book does, is provide context for that. Let's jump right into his upbringing. He was born in Long Island, but he was born
where I was born. In fact, blocks away from where I was born 10 years later. Well, I was born in Manhattan.
I think
he might have been born, he was born in New York City. He was raised in the Bronx.
Okay. And he's like part of the landscape now, where he lives there on out on Long Island, with just the various different places that he lived growing up and where he lives now. Tell us about Billy Joel growing up.
Just first off, you mentioned something, because I got an email from a friend of mine about how he is a fixture where he lives now,
mm-hmm.
and he says my friend says he's bought a lot of property in Sag Harbor. And seems like he can't stay away from drugs and drink. I think there's another rehab, since you mentioned it in your book. The people around here love him so much, they enable him all the time, saying the accident was mysterious.
Whoa.
So, yeah, he's very, very much beloved in Long Island, and quite rightly.
Mm-hmm.
He's done a lot for Long Island. He grew up in Levittown, which is a large area,
mm-hmm.
of Long Island. Covers a lot of towns, and it was where a lot of the GIs from World War II, this guy Levitt, just bought up all these potato fields out in Long Island. And all the GIs from World War II, who didn't want to live in New York City, found this nice place about half an hour at that time, now it's closer to 45 minutes because of the traffic,
mm-hmm.
out of the city, where they could raise their families, you know, with a plot of land, a couple of bedrooms, and, you know, on a slab of concrete. They were inexpensive houses, and they served very, very well. He grew up in a house where his father was never home.
Mm-hmm.
His father was an engineer for General Electric, and he was busy most of the time when Billy was, you know, from the time Billy was born until ultimately he divorced Billy's mother, was down in South America most of that time, setting up the electronics, you know, the electrical grid,
mm-hmm.
was wiring South America for the modern age. I mean, consider that in the late 40s, early 50s, a lot of that area was still not wired.
Right.
And that was what Howard Joel did for General Electric.
But now, of course, as you mentioned in the book, even when Howard Joel was there, it wasn't as if he was really there. He would sit down at a piano, and he could play classical compositions.
Yeah, he was he was a better than adequate classical pianist. May still well be. He's certainly brought up two of the most renowned musicians of their generations.
Hmm.
Billy, of course, and his son, Alexander Charles Joel, is highly regarded piano player, conductor, composer out in Vienna.
Wow. And Billy picked up a lot from his dad. He wasn't necessarily, early in his life, he wasn't interested as much in the classical music, but he could play it by ear.
And he could fake it, which was, as it turned out, even more important.
Hmm.
Mostly, you know, Billy and I have this in common also. I was a recording artist for a hot second in the 80s.
Hmm.
Billy had a much more successful recording career, mostly because he's a much better musician than I am.
Billy Joel grew up poor and did a lot of things before getting to his first band.
Many other things to get money to be a musician, including working on the oyster barges in Oyster Bay,
mm-hmm.
and inking typewriter ribbons.
Okay. And this is all leads up to him joining his very first band.
first band was called The Echoes.
Mm-hmm.
Joined them in, actually, I think last year of junior high school. They asked him because he could play the piano, and they wanted a piano and organ player.
Mm-hmm.
So he started playing piano and organ, and what happened was they were playing a dance at a local church for the youth group. And at the end of the dance, he got the attention of this girl who he had a huge crush on for, you know, months. And she wouldn't look at him twice in the hallways of school, but there he was on stage playing piano, and suddenly he piqued her interest. And then, right after that happened, the priest walks up and gives each member of the band $15. And Billy's thinking, wow, I can attract the girls, play music with my buddies, and get paid for it. What could be wrong?
That's a terrific realization. It's one of the many great stories in the book, Billy Joel, The Life and Times of an Angry Young Man. His next band he moved on to was called The Hassles, and these guys actually made it to actual recording status.
Yeah, they recorded for United Artists Records. The records have since been compiled onto a single CD, and they did some pretty good music, actually, and Billy wrote or co-wrote a good portion of it. It was kind of standard Long Island blue-eyed soul.
Mm-hmm.
It was a big blue-eyed soul scene in Long Island at the time, and, you know, had bands like Vanilla Fudge covering the Supremes, You Keep Me Hanging On, and the Rascals were certainly part of that scene.
But it was during this time that with this band he met his future first wife.
Oh yeah, she was the drummer's wife at the time.
John Small. And this is a very complicated relationship that they had while he was in the band with John, and he's also seeing John's wife at this time, and then they move on to another band that's just him and John called Attila.
Yep, Attila the Hun.
Really strange, because you would never expect Billy Joel to be in a band like Attila, which was rather Led Zeppelin influenced.
Well, actually, it was even more painful than that.
Really?
In fact, someone who's actually a big Billy Joel fan described the record, you know, the experience of listening to the record as like having somebody drilling a hole in your head.
Wow.
And that's from somebody who loves Billy Joel.
Really?
It's a very painful record. The way Billy hooked up his organ to the Marshall amplifiers and certain distortion units and things like that, and a friend of Billy's and John's, who was also their roommate at the time, says that when they plugged it in to rehearse, the rats would scatter. You could hear them all over the house, just take off in all directions. It made them crazy.
Wow. And now during this time, they're working together. They're living occasionally. Billy's living there. He's also sleeping in laundromats and wherever he can find a place. And he's sneaking around with John's wife until finally they do have to. They're just finally forced to come out with it.
It was even more complicated than that, really.
Mm-hmm.
John worked days. His parents still have, I think, a fairly successful interior design business. And there were stories about that, but I don't think I want to get into them right now.
No problem.
But John would go work for them during the day, and Billy had the room down the hall from the Smalls. And what one of my sources in this book discovered, who also lived there years later, was that the room that Billy stayed in and John and Elizabeth's room were connected by a closet that just went all down the hall. And so what would happen is John would go to work, Billy would go into the closet, go down the hall through the closet, and come out in Elizabeth's room. But, you know, this is not to say that John was necessarily the wronged party here.
Right.
Because John apparently would chase anything in a skirt.
Well,
or anything in a pair of pants.
Right.
Bulge appropriately.
He had quite a reputation going into his marriage, and even more during it. And, of course, now all of this stuff is really just such great material for Billy, because this is the stuff that he goes on to write about on all these these successful albums. But, of course, the first album, Cold Spring Harbor, hardly anybody ever heard until it was re-released in 1983.
Well, a lot of people heard this stuff when he did it in Songs of the Attic.
Mm-hmm.
Songs from the Attic. Songs of the Addict. Oh, boy. Songs from the Attic.
Right, the live recording from 1983.
That email I got this morning is sticking with me.
Yes,
The Addict.
We'll definitely have to. I definitely have to ask you about Billy Joel and drugs, because of there's a lot of talk about drugs, and certainly a lot of drugs backstage at Billy Joel concerts. But was Billy can we really honestly say Billy was into drugs as much as he was? I mean, we know he was into alcohol.
I have so many people who told me that Billy was heavy at one point into cocaine that I couldn't not write about it.
Mm-hmm.
It was ostensibly one of the main things that broke up his marriage to Christy Brinkley, was his drug use, because Christy doesn't.
And that was just 1993, wasn't that, when they finally ended that marriage?
92. It's been a bit since I wrote the book. And
well, there's this amazing stretch for Billy when he makes Nylon Curtain, which is an absolutely astonishing album. Here you have this angry, confused bitterness that's being fused with a political consciousness that Billy's never shown before. And then an Innocent Man, which is completely the opposite. We're talking about a guy absolutely madly in love for maybe, I mean, truly, it wasn't the first time, but it seemed like first time.
It may well have been the first time.
Okay.
I mean, there are moments where he kind of hints that his marriage to Elizabeth was largely a marriage of convenience for both of them.
Mm-hmm. And he's married to Elizabeth, and she's also his manager for a portion of his career, and then good portion of her career, and then that's when her brother took over, and that's where Billy's legal problems, which make up another great chapter of the book, Billy Joel, Life and Times of an Angry Young Man, Hank Bordowitz, the author. And tell us about this legal entanglement is something that's really a bit important to Billy's later career, because, again, he wrote songs about that, too.
Yeah. Well, Billy, like so many musicians, didn't pay attention to the business aspect of what he did. He trusted people to do that. And, I mean, that's not necessarily a wrong thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Frank Weber was his brother-in-law.
Right.
When Billy divorced Frank's sister, Frank was with him. They went to Haiti, got a Haitian divorce, and Frank flew him both ways and was there to commiserate, was there to... deal with it. But Frank, as one mutual acquaintance of all of them observed, was a dog. Frank, robbed Billy blind.
Mm-hmm.
And blind is the operative word here, because Billy did not care. Billy was not looking at his books. Billy says, Frank would bring out the books and his eyes would, Billy's eyes would glaze over.
And that's one of the aspects, and this all goes into Billy's songwriting. Everything it seems that he's ever done in his life has gone into his songwriting, and you hear the theme of trust all throughout the albums, The Bridge and Stormfront. There's elements of him talking about trust, and he really doesn't trust anybody.
It's come to that, though he does trust his inner circle.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to tell you that people are fiercely loyal to Billy.
Did that make writing this book that much difficult? Because I know Billy himself really didn't cooperate.
It made writing this book an adventure. For example, I've known Phil Ramone for 25 years. I mean, from mm-hmm. the time I was 18 years old and an engineer at another studio looking for work, I've known Phil Ramone. I interviewed with him back then. He was a member. He was honored by a fraternal organization I belonged to, and we got to know each other well. I'm a member of the National Academy of Recording Arts and Sciences,
mm-hmm.
and I see Phil at the meetings frequently. We know who we are. We know each other. know, I've been friendly with Phil for 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the first person I called when I got the contract to do this book. And I said, Phil, I've just got a contract to do a book on Billy Joel, and I'd like to talk to you about it, you know, what it was like working with him in the studio. And Phil said, well, you know, I'm going to have to call Billy about that. Call me back in a week.
Mm-hmm.
So I called him back a week later, and he said, listen, I can't talk to you about this, and no one in Billy's camp is going to talk to you about this.
Wow.
And it was true to an extent. There were a lot of people who gave me stuff off the record.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, since I try to be a good journalist, I couldn't use it.
Right.
But it did help shape the book.
Well, I think one of the best thing about this book for me was you give so much context to Billy's music that you read this book, then you listen to Billy's music, and the story really comes together so well. And his music becomes like a biography of its own thanks to the context that you provide, and that is really astonishing, especially for a Billy Joel fan like myself.
That was one of the aims, certainly.
Well, thank you so much for joining me, Hank, and thank you for putting up with our technical problems this morning.
Not a problem.
I really appreciate it. This is a fantastic book.
I'm glad you enjoyed it.
All right, Hank, have a good day.
Drive safe, Dad.